Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the CLAB conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Terry Straub. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, operator. Hi, everyone. I hope you all had a great summer. I don't know where it went to, but it feels like it came and went very, very quickly for me anyway. Hillary is also on the line, as is Rachel, and we really thank you all for joining on this call. We know you're real busy this week right after the holiday and long summer and catching up on everything. Today's call will focus on the root cause analysis and on positive blood cultures. We found when we looked at the data, things were going along really, really well up until about June. And in June, most of the hospitals that submitted data had some spikes, which really changes the aggregate success of the project on the one-year date. So that really concerned us. So we started looking back, trying to see if there was any patterns. Hillary reviewed quite a number of the root cause analysis reports that have been sent to her. And there seems to be some common threads. And then when we spoke to folks, there were some other issues that they mentioned contributed to the spikes. Some felt that it was June. It was before the new rotation started in July. Folks got somewhat lax. We want to, at this point, find out, were there any common threads, have folks conducted the root cause analysis, and try to get back in that improvement mode with the pending public reporting of infection rates. My big concern, and it's probably somewhat of a selfish concern, is we would really like to have the hospitals that participated in the CLABs look much better than the rest of the state when the state starts collecting this data on the CLABs January 1 of this year. So that said, I'll turn the call over to Hillary and Rachel for any comments, and then we can move forward with some discussion and begin to open up the lines.
So, Rachel, I'll start, and then maybe if I leave anything out, you can chime in. Hi, this is Hillary. I just wanted to let you know what we sent to you before the call, just so that you know the materials that you had. The first is our monthly CLAB infection data results that we try to give you every month. As you can see, as Terry said, in June there was a little spike up to 2.4 infections per 1,000 central line days. We've since gotten a couple additional hospitals data since we sent this to you, and it looks like it is even a little bit higher than this. So it's almost at about 2.5 infections per 1,000 central line days, which is pretty much where we were in February of 2006. So that's why we're really focusing this call on revisiting the root cause analysis procedures. And then the other thing that we just sent to you, so some of you may not have gotten it. We sent it about an hour before the call. There, on a very timely note, in the Joint Commission Journal on Quality and Patient Safety, Dr. Shannon and his colleagues at Allegheny General Hospital put together a paper where they talk about real-time problem solving to eliminate central line associated bloodstream infections. And in that, they pretty much lay out their steps, what they did to accomplish reducing and almost eliminating infections there. And one of the key steps you'll see when you do get to read this article is that they really do step number three, real-time investigation of individual infections. So one of their four primary steps is really involving root cause analysis, doing it right away, and that's just a consistent reinforcement of the importance of this. So that being said, I'll just see if Rachel has any other comments, and then what we want to do today is open up the call to any comments from you about different kinds of root cause analysis procedures that you've been conducting over the past couple of months. As you'll remember, we did have a call on this in around in around March of 2006 talking about the same thing, and we just want to really reinforce the importance of this, and that's why we're focusing this call again on this discussion. So, Rachel, do you have anything to add before we open it up for this discussion?
No, not really. Just hoping, again, that some of the folks on the line will be able to share some discussion about hopefully what they found when they looked into any additional infections or increases in infections that they may have had in the last couple of months.
Okay, great. So, operator, if we could just open it up right now and take any comments and have been doing to analyze their infections and conducting root cause analysis.
Ladies and gentlemen on the phone line, if you have a question or comment to make at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone.
Hey, maybe what we'll do is just go through the list of participants and see who is available on the call, just to talk a little bit about the RCA process, and then work from there. Is there anyone on the call from St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital?
Did you want me to just go ahead and open up all the lines?
You know what, why don't you try it? If it gets too noisy, then we will close the lines, but that may be helpful for discussion, and there's not too many folks on that. Just for those of you on the call, since the operator is opening all the lines, if you have your phone on mute and you have music or anything, please unmute it.
If you don't have a muting feature, you can always press star 6 to mute and unmute your phone line.
I can't do this right now. I'm trying to listen.
All lines are open at this time.
Okay.
Terry?
About the discussion?
Terry?
Yes.
It's Barbara and Miles from St. Luke's Roosevelt on the line.
Perfect.
Okay. We don't get infections on central light. Now,
I want to make us more excited about.
Barbara? You know what? I don't think this is working, operator. Operator?
Yes, ma'am. All lines are muted now.
Okay, yeah, that became a disaster. Okay, could you just let the folks from St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital open up that line?
One moment. Their line is open now.
Hey, Barbara?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Much better.
Barbara, have you been looking at your RCAs on an ongoing basis?
Well, I have to tell you, we're not actually as timely as we'd like to be. By the time we get the group of people together, it's often a couple of days past the actual event. So it's still sometimes helpful. Like we just finished doing two from last week, so I guess maybe because it was the long weekend, it was a little behind, but we haven't been as timely as we would have preferred.
Okay, so that's one observation. However, when you did do them, whether it was in real time or post-infection, have there been any common threads or any interventions that you've been able to identify that potentially could have prevented any of those infections?
You know what we're looking at more now, Terry, because it seems to be that they don't seem related to insertions.
Okay.
I guess that's one thing we can say pretty clearly. It doesn't seem to be related to the insertion technique. And now we're still trying to toy with the maintenance kind of issues that we haven't been able to really pinpoint a specific maintenance issue or just overall kind of accessing the device or use of or lack of use of antiseptics on the device once they're in place more than X number of days.
Do you have a dressing kit in place, Barbara?
We do.
Yeah,
we've had it for many moons.
Okay, and my next question, does your dressing adhere well to the line?
You know, that's one thing we've found, even despite lines that don't get infected, that the internal jugular ones, and we're curious how other people are keeping them on, the dressings on the internal jugulars need many, many reinforcements.
Okay, that's helpful. Yeah. Maybe others can help chime in and let us know the types of device they're using. on those lines, because I think we've heard that before, and there are different grades of dressings that adhere a little better. Are you using a biopatch?
No, not yet. We're actually looking. One of our sites does not want to look at it at all, and they're actually got the best numbers of all locations. Oh, this is the patch. Miles just went out and got the kit. We're actually listening to the call up in the ICU. Our CVP dressing is a Medline kit with everything already in it, except the biopatch, because we're not using biopatch. But we're entertaining using biopatch on two of our units.
Okay, so that would be interesting to see if...
Yeah. You know, the other thing that's coming up for us lately is the yeast infections. So we're wondering how much help the biopatch will be for yeast line infections. And I don't know if anybody's had that experience.
Okay. So maybe others, if you join in, can let us know if you're having a problem with yeast infection. Now, Barbara, I'm not an infection control practitioner. What prevents a yeast infection, or what causes it? Is it the moisture, or would...
That's when we're discussing these two cases now. Could that be that they were colonized with this yeast and that it just grows more because of the dressing and, you know, it's hot in the summer?
Do you use the chlorhexidine in your dressing kit?
Yeah.
Properly?
Do you put antibiotics in your line when you do the dressing?
Miles is wondering if when you get to other people, is anybody using local antibiotics like the antibiotic ointment? Probably not. But.
Okay. You know what I'll do now, Barbara? I'll ask the operator to open it up to comments on some of the remarks you made, and then we'll call on some other hospitals.
Okay. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you. Operator, would you open it up to questions or responses to some of the findings that Barbara has had, and then we'll go back and call on hospitals. And once we call on the hospital name operator, if you would just open up their individual line.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment to make at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. We have a question or comment from David Crimmins.
Hi, it's David Crimmins at Beth Israel. We've been using the biopatch, and the two that I can think of off the top of my head were not yeast infections. I think one was a coag negative, and I forget what the second one. So we've not had a problem. And I think that the dressing, you know, the problem with the dressing is probably just sight. I mean, we're using the same dressing kit that Barbara and the people at SLR are using, and it's just something about the internal jugular and sometimes other sites, depending on the patient, it's just hard to get a surface that they'll stick to.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
We have another question from Deborah DiDomenico.
Hi, Terry. It's Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Listen, I really more or less don't have I have a comment, but I'll share our findings and stuff. More or less like the first person that spoke, we had one central line infection in April, not in June. But we're trying to do risk cause analysis after the last presentation. The timeliness is a real issue. What we found, or what our gut is, it's not in the setup of, you know, we have all the packs and everything else. It's in the line maintenance. And we're very fortunate we have an IV team, but it's the ICU staff that do the dressing changes and everything, the maintenance, in the ICU. And we have a monitor, but the monitor is not done on a daily basis. It's like a snapshot. And what we're finding is that we had nursing events where the dressings came out of ICU and they weren't on properly and there were some issues. So what we're looking at that with their monitoring, it looks like 100% compliance, but in reality it's not. So we think that the maintenance is an issue.
Yeah, it keeps coming up over and over again. The maintenance is a real issue. And if anyone's on the line before we even call on your hospital, if you've been successful at the maintenance issue, we'd love to hear from you. as far as putting a protocol in place when dressing changes are done, what the standard practice is, and, again, the adherence of the new dressing on the site and how long it actually lasts.
As far as the BioPatch, we've been using the BioPatch even before it was fashion, and we've had great success with it when it was able to stay on, but we haven't had any problems with candida or yeast infections in the bloodstream. So that's basically about it, but we are making our effort. And, again, the team is really myself, the nurse manager in the ICU, and the IV team nurse managers. So we're not really getting a lot of support from our intensivists and everybody else, but, you know, we're still trudging on to do the best we can.
And what kind of support would be helpful for you, Debbie?
Any? No, you know what it is? I mean, first of all, we're looking at, we found some problems with the physicians that are putting in the lines. We don't have the issue with the interns and residents because they're very rarely assisting. They don't do it on their own. It's limited in the ER setting. Most of them are our regular general surgeons, and they're not suturing it properly, and they're leaving, like, a lot out that should be covered under the dressing. So we're having some of those issues, and the doctors that have been here a long time, and they're resistant to change. So we don't really have good physician support. You know, and administratively, the bottom line is they give you the autonomy, and they say, just do it. They'll support us, but they're really not supporting us.
Okay, so we'll get back to you on that issue, Deb, and brainstorm a little bit how we can gain some additional champions, maybe through the concept that Dr. Shannon talked about, the problem-solving rounds.
Right.
Because I think that will be very, very effective. So why don't you email Hillary, and we can set up a time to talk.
All right. The last thing I just want to tell you, I don't want to take up your whole time, but we have continuous quality improvement with all the department heads, and my CEO is very passionate about it. And I'm giving a presentation on this whole CLAB thing, finally, to all the department heads, not only clinical, but everything, and as far as, you know, trying to show where we're at, where we've gone, how this is going to help with mandatory reporting, what we've improved, where we need to go and stuff. So hopefully that will help support our cause. And the CFO is also going to be there. So, you know, we're going to do a lot of marketing. But, again, we're all putting out fires because you don't have just CLABs. You have 20 other things to do, and you spread thin.
Right. And I think that's what we need to talk about because, again, we from Greater New York and UHF, really want to continue this concept of creating models for improvement. And part of the model, CLABs will be a failure in your hospital if you don't have the infrastructure in place to move other agendas forward.
Okay, well, thank
you. That's a great agenda item for a future call to reinforce that and discuss the successes and replicable components of CLABs to create that model for quality improvement.
Okay, thank you, Terry.
Terry, this is Rachel and folks on the phone. I guess one other thing, we've heard throughout the collaborative that the timeliness of the RCA is an issue. And I guess one of the other things I'd like people to comment on is the timeliness because there is a delay in the identification and reporting of the infection or the positive blood culture, or is the delay more inherent to the resources necessary to do the RCA itself? In other words, having, you know, being able to pull the people together, you know, to look at the case and so forth and so on. So I guess I'd appreciate a little more specificity as we go forward with this discussion. When we talk about timeliness, is it the lack of resources on the infection control side, which we have heard about in some cases, or is it the lack of resources coming from more of the quality improvement side, which we've heard in other instances?
So, operator, with that, maybe we'll open it up and see if anyone out there can answer Rachel's question.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to respond, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. First response comes from Barbara Smith.
Hi. Rachel, to answer for us, it's not a question of getting the identification. It's the case of trying to find the, you know, the people that knew the case who may have changed services already. So it's corralling the people together that will remember the patient.
Okay.
Not identifying the case, because that's pretty straightforward from the lab.
Our next response comes from Mary McTeague.
Yeah. Hi, this is Michelle Gillis-Harry. I'm from Trinitas. I do infection control here, and I can sort of relate to the previous caller who mentioned the resources in infection control to do timely root cause analysis. It's sort of, you know, this is on top of lots of other things that come in on a typical day, and needless to say, the other things that sort of, you know, happen as well. So it tends not to be as timely, and it's somewhat, you know, a lot of retrospective, you know, remembering, you know, for the staff to remember what happened or, you know, to the particular patient and all that stuff. So I can relate to that timely root cause analysis, not always, you know, 100%.
Operator, is there anyone else that would want to make?
I show no more responses, ma'am.
Okay, so as folks answer or participate in the call, we'd appreciate you just continuing to address the concern Rachel brought up and the issues that Barbara initially brought up when she was kind enough to share their findings. Is there anyone on the call from NYU? Operator?
One moment while I go ahead and open up their lines.
You want to open it?
We do have a Joan Barrett Finn from NYU Medical Center.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, how are you?
Sorry to call on you.
Okay. We're having some of the similar issues that the other hospitals are having in terms of timely root cause analysis. It does take a few days to get the results back from microbiology. Then you're sort of playing catch-up trying to figure out exactly what happened. I mean, the checklist does help us to pinpoint exactly where the issues are. And so far, we look at all the issues that we've been having, and it seems like line maintenance is coming up as one of the major problems where there is an infection. So right now we're in the process, our committee's in the process of formalizing our line maintenance care. We have not, you know, we have written a new standard and everything. That's our next big part of attacking the central line infection issues. But the issues are very similar to the rest of the other hospitals. Okay. Hello?
What particular type of issues did you find?
The issue is line maintenance. The stickiness of the dressing, as I said before. The necklines are difficult to keep the dressings on. The suturing of the lines by the physician. The placement of the biopatch. It just goes on. It seems simple, but those type of issues.
Okay. With the placement of the biopatch, what do you mean in that regard? Is there difficulty or?
When the line is inserted, you know, the biopatch goes on at the time of insertion. If sometimes the physician sutured the line in first, then the biopatch doesn't quite fit over the site of the central line. And then you sort of have to play with it a little bit and try and fix the biopatch so that you get direct contact with the skin so it doesn't sit on top of the hub of the central line. Okay. So those are some of the things that we find out sometimes we're having.
Okay, if, just because of my own ignorance, if that biopatch was put in place prior to the suturing, would it be stuck in place from the suturing?
No, because you'd leave a little space for you to take it out.
Okay, so an appropriate intervention.
Permanent, no. But it's
I know it sounds minor, but it's huge, believe me.
It's huge when you sort of don't have anywhere to put the biopatch, when you know the patient is definitely based on, you know, we have specific criteria for biopatch placement. We don't put it on all patients. And you know it's going to be a long-term line and patient has multiple other issues going. And you know that this patient you know, based on our criteria, should get a biopatch and you can't put it on. And, you know, then you get the clinician sort of tugging at the line a little, trying to let it fit, so it becomes an issue.
Helpful, because that I haven't heard before. And if anyone has addressed that issue or finds it to be an issue, do you think it's just a training issue, a re-education?
It's a little piece of our re-education issue. And it's also, you know, it wasn't our general practice to put the dressing on before suturing, so that is definitely a training issue. And sort of like remembering, you know, that this patient needs a biopatch and we should do this first. But that's just one of the issues. I mean, the big, you know, there's issues with, you know, the triple lumen catheters, making sure the caps are on, that if you take them off and you open the line, that you need to put a new one on, not recap. You know, there's some definite issues related to that, that the assumption, a lot of assumptions about the care of the central line. People, I think, just have to be, you know, with everything, be more respectful of the line.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that information. Is there anyone on the line from New York Presbyterian? Operator?
One moment. We have a John Holmes from New York Presbyterian.
Hey, John.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. Any updates from you?
So just on the other comments that people are making, I mean, I think we're all in a similar boat. Definitely maintenance continues to be issues. So for our team, what we did, I have a team of nurses in the unit who are my central line team and help do monitoring of the dressing sites to make sure we're replacing dressings when we need it. Additionally, beyond the 7-day change that we normally do, and each of those team members took like 3 or 4 of the staff members and did one at a time, going over the dressing change with them, letting them demonstrate the dressing change and just hitting the major points of it, that they need to be wearing the mask. When you switch out your gloves, make sure you do hand hygiene in between. We've put little cards on our computer just reminding everybody about when they intervene in a line to change the red caps, to do the hand hygiene, and to make sure that they're doing a good alcohol scrub of injection ports. We do use the biopatch, and actually it's a manufacturer recommendation that you put the biopatch on before suturing so that you do leave enough space, because the idea is that the biopatch should be in contact with the skin all the way around to create the zone of inhibition. And then our RCA method is not. We haven't had good success with that. It tends to be just a matter of getting the people together after the infection's been identified. It tends to be the issue and the problem.
Okay. And have you seen any improvements in your rates?
When you look year to year, when you look over a several month period, you definitely see improvements in our rates. We're running at least half of what we were last year, so we've definitely made progress on there. Since we've been using the biopatch, it seems not to have gotten rid of our infections, but it does seem to help us control for less jumps in rates when they do go up.
That's helpful. And what's the spread of the use of the biopatch within NYP?
Right now, we're still the only unit using the biopatch. The rest of the central line project and the insertion checklist and the just the central line policy in general, and making sure you're doing all parts of it, of the bundle, have been spread throughout the rest of the hospital through nurse epidemiology. We have a large project going on through our nurse epidemiology to roll that out to all the ICUs in the hospital.
Okay. Terrific. Is there anything that you've noticed in your process, either with the dressing changes or with working with the physicians, that you think is the best practice that would be helpful to anyone else?
I think that a couple of the decisions that have to be made are exactly coming up, making sure you do have a policy for when you're changing the injection ports or one-way valves on the lines, whether you're doing that with your line changes or whether you're doing that with your dressing changes. And then we just really think that we get busy and we run in the room and we need to give a medicine, and are we making sure every time we walk in that room, are we asking what can we do to prevent infection this moment? And, I mean, it's a matter of changing culture and habit of just this is really important every time you interfere in that line, every time you go in to draw bloods, every time you go in to give a medicine or change your lines, that you're doing all the little things. And, like, instead of replacing the red caps with itself, get a whole new cap and put that on, the little dead-end caps. Make sure you're replacing those every time to just try to prevent any infection.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure.
Operator, you want to try Lenox Hill Hospital? I'm just going through this list in no random order, just one at a time.
We have on the phone line from Lenox Hill Hospital, Raisa Gillies.
Good afternoon, Raisa. Hello? Is anyone there?
Hello.
Operator, you want to try NYU Downtown?
One moment. We have Sonia Brown from NYU Downtown.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi.
Hello?
Hi. Hello?
Sonia?
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
Add to this discussion?
Yes. Well, actually, we've been having very similar types of issues with maintenance. Some of the things that we also found was that, you know, our checklists are sometimes not always being pulled out of the patient's chart before transfer. So that sort of delays in a lot of our reviews, too. So that kind of complicates things a little bit, too. But, you know, we would also need to improve on maintenance-type issues and also the timeliness of the root cause analysis. Hello?
Here. So you're also having the same issue with the timeliness and getting the team together for the root cause analysis?
Yeah. Only because of the change in shift with nursing and you know, our rotation with our physicians. But we're also having most of our difficulty in services, where we see differences between medicine and services, surgery, and their practices also. And that's been kind of a challenge because we have more rotation with surgery than we do with medicine.
Go back to thanks for that, Sonia. We're going to go back to asking hospitals, but I just want to focus on the timeliness of trying to get the team together, just because it's come up, I think, now four or five different times. And we know that a couple of the hospitals in the collaborative have some pretty good root cause analysis procedures where they're doing it more immediately. I don't know. I'm going to go out on a limb here and see if someone from Mount Sinai is on the call, and maybe they can just sort of refresh the group's memory just on how they conduct root cause analysis, how they address this timeliness issue, because they've had a pretty good run with conducting these and figuring out where these infections are coming from with the entire team. So, operator, can you see if Mount Sinai Hospital is on the line and open up their line?
We have a David Calfee from Mount Sinai Hospital.
Hi, David.
Hi. Hello?
Hi. Can you hear us?
I can.
I don't know if you understood that.
I did. The way most of our units have been doing it is the clinical nurse manager of the unit is notified when a positive blood culture is called to the unit by the microbiology lab, and the nurse managers, who've been very active in this project, pretty much start the investigation right then themselves, involving the attending physician who's in the unit at that time as well. And then infection control is usually shortly thereafter pulled into the picture as well.
How did you get everyone involved? I'm assuming it was pretty early on in the collaborative. How did you get everyone involved and everyone together to do this?
Well, I think the team has just been very interested in this project from the very beginning. I think they've also seen it as their opportunity to defend their practices and try to deny that these are truly CLABs and that maybe they're due to something else. I think there's certainly it's to their benefit to look into these as soon as possible before you kind of lose the opportunity to really see other potential sources as well as causes if it is a central line associated process.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Coffey. There's actually, I want to see one other hospital that really seemed like they had a really good root cause analysis procedure in getting the team together. So, operator, is Our Lady of Mercy Medical Center on the line?
We have, last name is Reardon Bowen from Our Lady of Mercy.
Can you open up their line? We'd like to...
Their line is open.
Carmel? Hello? Our Lady of Mercy? Okay, well, maybe we can catch them a little bit later to see if they can describe how they got their team together and how the attending physicians are really involved there. But in the meantime, we'll go back to a list.
Is there anyone from LIJ on the call or part of North Shore?
We do have a Jacqueline Parrish from Long Island Jewish Medical Center.
Okay.
Can you open up her line?
The line is open.
Jacqueline? Hello? I guess no one wants to talk, and I don't want to waste anyone's time here. Operator, why don't you just go through the list of hospitals that you have registered and open one line at a time? You don't have to announce the name, just the hospital.
All right. We have Beth Israel Medical Center.
Okay.
Hi, it's David again.
Hi, David.
One of our problems with the root cause analysis of our last two, which one was in June and one is currently, there has been some sort of timeliness of it, partially because the patients have had so much else going on. It was sort of hard to pick out that it actually was a CLAB rather than, you know, in connection with some other process. It's in the early days when we had a lot of them, it was pretty clear cut, and
mm-hmm.
that, you know, just made it easier. Now there's a whole lot more confusion, really, whether it was truly a CLABS or related to a UTI or pneumonia or some other process going on. I guess that's pretty much all I can add.
Okay. Thank you. Operator, next hospital.
Next hospital is Cabrini Medical Center.
Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, it's Christina.
Hi, Christina.
Hi. I'm new to this position, and since January, we haven't had any infections. And I've studied up to June, and I've gone back and done retrospective studies, and anyone that I thought could possibly have been a CLABS, I've actually went through the charts and did root cause analysis, and there were none. The team is overseen by an MD, an intensivist, and the NCC. So they're very strong on the CLABS team for me. I'm the one, though, that gets all the positive blood cultures, and because I'm new and I'm still going back from January, I haven't had a chance to do it daily, to go down with them or through reports and look at them. It's been more retrospective for me. I'm hoping in 2 or 3 months, that daily I'll be able to go down and talk to everyone about each and every blood culture that comes back positive. And they also call in infectious disease fellows whenever they feel that there could be a CLABS starting.
Okay.
And Hillary will catch up with you, Christine, on your data and everything.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Is there, operator, just open up the line for the next hospital. Is there anyone on there from North Shore? Any part of the system?
We do have North Shore Long Island College Hospital.
Okay. Well, open it up and they can clarify who they are. Hello?
It's Long Island College Hospital.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Do you have anything to add to the discussion?
Well, we just started doing the program with the biopatch, so I don't actually have any statistics with me about the infection rate. But we just started doing in-services with the product, so we're hoping that our compliance is good. I had one question as I came in late. This is done during a dressing change also, the biopatch?
That's each hospital. It's not part of the bundle. So some hospitals do it during the dressing changes. Some put it on initially at insertion, and others have put protocols in place that say if the line's in greater than 7 days, that they'll use a biopatch. So it varies in different practice settings.
Right.
Or there's other patient characteristics that would, lead you to think that there's a, good likelihood of an infection.
Well, I think what we did is that we, when they do the dressing change after the 5 to 7 days, I think it's 7 days that they would put a new one on. There's no objection to that, right?
No. There's actually, is this Colleen?
No, Michelle.
There's, on the website, on the collaborative website, there's a whole section on the biopatch and how, in the question and answer section, and different criteria for using biopatch. So I can guide you to that.
Okay, thank you.
Drop me an email so I have know who to send it to.
I could find it on my own?
My email is actually it's hjlon, hf like Frank, nyc.org.
H.J. Long?
It's J-A-L-O-N.
Okay, got it.
So, operator, if you could go on to another hospital that's on the line.
We have participant from North Shore Long Island Jewish Medical.
Okay.
Hi, it's Maureen Hamarad from Quality Management with the System. And can you hear me?
Yes, hi,
okay, very good. I just wanted to say that we're experiencing a lot of the same things others are, that we go over and review all of the CLABs each month, whether there are any clusters or commonalities. And the thing that we keep seeing, too, is that it's with line maintenance, not so much with the line insertion. We've developed a page that will then do a review of each infection. Each of the hospitals, the infection control nurses, when they do their rounds, will now collect certain data. I was just hoping to be able to tell you what the data is, but they're looking for the time and the place and all the variables that we could think of that would be relevant to then breaking down what's causing the infection. And then we started that about 2, maybe 3 months ago, and we're hoping within a reasonable time that we'll have a database that will be able to look for more commonalities. But at this point, we're seeing most of it with the line maintenance, and also a couple of the hospitals have been discussing now the biopatch and whether it would be worthwhile at the first insertion or at the dressing change. So we're researching that ourselves now. So pretty much it's the same as the other folks are finding, but we're trying to collect data now on line maintenance so that we can, come up with something significant or not with that.
Did you, were there any particular issues at one or two particular hospitals? Did you see any patterns at different sites?
At this time, no. but I think that when we start there, it's a kind of an involved data collection sheet that Donna and a few of the other nurses and quality management put together, and I think we might see some commonalities. We're hoping that you know, there's something that we can improve that's specific, but at this point we're collecting the data, and as I said, each month, you know, we'll see one in a hospital. Mostly it's one. Every now and then you'll get a unit that has two, and then we specifically look to see if there's any commonalities, and we have not been able to find them at this point either. So we're going to keep collecting the data and then hopefully be able to use the data in correcting something that's not being done properly. But everybody's really watching them, and I have to give a lot of credit to the ICU nurses and the doctors, and they're really doing a good job. That's all I have to say.
That you started that.
Yeah, that will be really important. And you have such an advantage coming from a system.
Yes, and having you know, the great data analyzers and programmers, too, to help us with that. So we're very lucky.
All right. Thanks, Maureen.
Sure.
Anyone on the line from Montefiore?
We have an Ashish Chanwan from Montefiore.
Hello. Okay.
Anyone there?
And we also have...
Hello, hello, hi.
Yeah.
Hi, hello.
Hi, Audrey.
This is Audrey. Hi. I have one of our ID fellows who was in on the call with us. That was his name. But here at Montefiore, one of the things that we are up against right now is that in our ICUs, we had changes in most of all of our nursing leadership, our nursing managers. So we have a whole new group of nursing managers. So we are in the midst of trying to get them all together to re-educate and to strive to get them on board with our program. In the medical ICU where we actually started, Dr. Karwa has been our lead person there. And, again, we have a new manager there as well, a new nursing manager. So, you know, we are kind of like starting all over again almost with our new managers and getting everyone back on board with what we're trying to do hospital-wide, especially in the ICU. So it's right now it's a bit of a challenge for us. But one of the things that we are doing, one of my nurses who's been the lead nurse, Mary Bevan, and myself, and our critical care nurse specialist, we are at the final stages right now of writing our training module for the insertion, maintenance, and dressing change. And what we basically are doing is going back to our policies, and we are writing up the learning module for the staff, and then we'll come up with questions for them. And this is going to be a requirement for all of the nurses and physicians in the critical care area. And then we're going to roll it out to the rest of the hospital as a part of our whole CLAP initiative. So the training and the maintenance we feel right now is a major part of what we're trying to implement here, because we do feel that maintenance is not what it should be, especially when it comes to accessing the lines. And you have so many different techniques that can be used based on whether you're going to be going to the actual hub, which, you know, requiring sterile technique, or if you are going to be using a needle connector, which you don't really open the line up totally. It's going to be a little different technique. So we want to make sure that everyone's aware of all of these different strategies and what they should be doing with a test, you know, with the module and then a testing. This will help us to confirm that they have a clear understanding of what is going on. And so that's one of the things that we really, right now, are at the final stages of getting that all done.
Audrey, I guess that's helpful, but I guess that brings us to the bigger issue that I always am concerned with and like to go back to, and that's the model and the system issue, because with change of staff, maybe that's part of the root cause analysis problem that you find that people aren't properly trained, but if we had systems in place, how do we make efforts like labs, which in theory should be one of the easier quality improvement efforts, and I say that, you know, in theory, knowing how difficult it is, how do we make the transition between staff transparent and make sure even when leadership changes that the right thing is done for the patient over and over again?
Yeah.
I'm not asking you specifically, but in general, as we continue to look at the issue of a model for quality and patient safety and eliminating infections and saving lives and all the good things that we're supposed to be doing,
how do we make this, you know, transparent process that changes as staff changes?
Yeah, I think, you know, that it is a system issue, and that, as has been discussed, you know, earlier, you need that administrative support from the top. You need to have, you know, everyone on board, not just like my nurse managers, but the directors of nursing, you know, that's over the nurse managers. You need to have that presence at all times. And if you have a system that's not just dependent upon your infection control staff, and I've seen, you know, it working in many of the other institutions where there's this system is there, that you have your quality management team, and you have the administrative support, and all that works together so that when you do have a change in leadership, the system should be so smooth and so transparent that you have a process in place, you know. And when you don't have that, to me, then, you know, things kind of break down. So it needs to, you know, start from the top, and you need to have everyone on board and not fighting for that support that you need. And oftentimes I find, you know, that you get a lot, you know, of verbal, you know, support, but when it comes down to really working together as a team, you know, I find that sometimes it's very difficult. And that's the battle that I'm facing. And I know that right now, you know, with us coming to, you know, our New York State reporting of the CLABS, that, you know, I think my support is going to increase, because one of the things that I'm planning is getting all of the major players from the top involved, because now they have to get involved. And it's going to be very important to get involved to make sure that we have this system in place. And that's all that I can do, is to try to make sure that this happens with a good system in place. I think if you have that, then that's half your battle won.
I guess we hear that over again, yeah. The leadership support and rounding. How would it be, and this is for anyone on the call, and please answer, that if we set a goal for the next month, that by the time we have our next conference call next month, that you have all invited your senior nursing leaders, definitely the CNO, and head physician champion, and possibly your CEO, CFO, to do one rounding or one unit visit talking about the CLABS and the issues that you are still facing prior to the public reporting, so that you are well-positioned as public reporting comes into place, and they're fully aware of all the issues, to see if they can begin problem solving with you. Anybody have any comments on that and see that as a goal for the next month? And it will help lead into the rapid response system project as we prepare for senior leadership problem solving rounds. But it will help introduce folks to some of the actual nitty-gritty issues that are seeming in many cases not necessarily to be clinical issues, but again, system issues and support issues. I really would love to hear back from anyone on this, since it seems to be a common thread among the majority of hospitals.
We have Mr. Manoj Karwa, who's queued up.
Okay. Hi, Manoj.
I work with Audrey, and I have tried to get in before Audrey had actually summarized everything very nicely. I had nothing more to say. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks.
So, operator, is there anyone else on the line that would kind of like to address what Terry asked?
If you'd like to address the comment, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone.
Right,
Ms. Joan Barrett, who's queued up?
Okay. Actually, it's Judy Dilworth here, Terry.
Hi, Judy.
And just in listening to the conversation, are we all on the same page in terms of what is related to essential line insertion versus line maintenance? Because when we do our root cause analyses, again, there's a delay in looking at it. When we look back, we've established 3 to 5 days are generally related to line insertion, but if it goes beyond 5 days, we concur that it's a line maintenance thing. And I don't know, you know, it shouldn't be doctors against nurses in terms of who's causing the infection. I think we have to remember central line insertion at the same time as we're trying to clean up the maintenance issue. But I don't know if everyone else is using the same benchmark or how people are coming upon now realizing that maintenance is the issue and that line insertion is not an issue any longer.
I think just from history, Judy, I don't think it's anyone against anyone. It's just the system issue. But earlier on some of these conference calls, folks that were doing really well seemed to have mastered the insertion bundle, and they were really following all of those components of the bundle and finding that they were at zero. When they started to have some infections, when they looked back, it seemed to be related to the dressing changes and adherence of the dressing, with no actual definitive answer of what the cause is. One hospital that we spoke to last month actually talked about the type of dressing that they're using. There are different grades, I guess, of the Tegaderm dressing, and some adhere better, so they actually switched to the better adhering dressing, so that nothing could seep in during the dressing changes. Others commented that they were, when they were doing their daily rounds, quite often they found the dressing peeling back or peeling off moisture issues. So that's why I think the focus is shifting a little bit from insertion to maintenance, given the findings of the original root cause analysis, the goal of zero, and now trying to maintain the lines.
Right, but is everyone using 5 days as a determining time, a positive culture, 5 days after a line insertion to be related to a line maintenance issue?
Folks on the call can answer that question, but we can also get back to you with the standard if there are any clear definitions.
Because I think that would be helpful also in terms of public reporting. We obviously will have to have an action plan or some kind of plan as to how to address it. And
you're absolutely right. Thank you for that. Does anyone have any response to Judy's question?
If anyone would like to queue up, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. We have Ms. Vita Padron on the line.
Hello.
Hi, Josie.
Hi, how are you, Hillary and Terry? I have a couple of things to say. First, it's amazing how alike the experience is in the different hospitals. You already know, but we from the very start went hospital-wide, adult hospital-wide, with our project. And here, one person collects the insertion checklists for all those units. That person is the director of nursing for critical care, who's sitting with me, Judy Morrow. And while I'm saying that about nursing leadership and how important it is, we have a new nurse manager for critical care, and she's really the first person we've had since the beginning of the initiative. We had someone who was temporary for a few weeks, and that already is such an important element, so I have to agree with my colleagues who have been responding. Second, we had line maintenance problems early, and it was the MDs on the task force and the other critical care physicians who made such a ruckus about that, that the critical care nurses with nursing education and nursing administration really resolved that. I can't speak as well for all the general patient care units, but for those the critical care units, we don't have line maintenance problems. Another thing I wanted to share, if I could find my notes, the problems that we have with insertion are with the surgical service, the residents. They've all been educated, but they don't all get the word. And again, it's the physicians who are constantly addressing that issue. We did also have problems, I want to share, with our dialysis unit. They did not have their own equipment supply when we first started, and somehow it just wasn't working. That's been resolved. And finally, about the root cause analysis, we have a lack of infection control resources to be in the critical care unit the way we should be. We're not. And despite multiple reminders at critical care meetings to the physicians, please report those CLABs to us, we're always in the position of infection control when we finally find them. Now we would have to find the physician and make it all happen rather than the other way around. We're hopeful that with our new nurse manager, we're going to do better because she's already helping us with VAPs. You know, when she hears on rounds that there's a vent-associated pneumonia, she's letting us know. So we're hoping she's going to do the same down the line. So really, we're not doing root cause analysis. We had tried to do a retrospective to kind of see what the patterns were. That's how we learned about the dialysis unit, but we're not doing it timely at all. And about our biopatch, we're putting it on, the biopatch on day 7, unless we know that the biopatch will be in place for a long time, and we are using biopatch on all femoral lines. I want to tell you that the dressing that we use is a Sorbervue internal jugular ultimate dressing. We are not having problems with that product coming off. It's staying in place. We learned about that product from Bob Garcia over at Brookdale. And I think I've said everything I wanted to. Okay?
Thanks, Josie.
Thank you.
I guess that it continues to bring into the issue where we started the call off with about the root cause analysis. I think we all face the same issues, and it won't change. Resources are scant. They continue to be so unless all of a sudden you all have a windfall of not only money but also the individuals who are trained to do certain activities in infection control. So the question is, does an infection control practitioner always have to be the driver of the root cause analysis team, or can they identify some of the infections and the team gets together to discuss the issues so that you're not so dependent on one individual or two or three individuals that are serving the entire institution? Again, trying to strategize and think, how can we do the work given the resources that we have? I think as a family member, if we were to say to a family member who received an infection, we don't know why it happened, it just did, we don't have the resources, that wouldn't be an acceptable answer. So how do we step back and approach this from the perspective of how do we talk to a family about the issue in a positive way, letting them know how breakdowns do occur and how we can prevent them in the future. Any comments? These are all challenging questions, and unfortunately, I guess the answers really are not there, but I do believe together we can kind of refocus our efforts, retool how we're looking at the root cause analysis and try to, again, invite others to become part of the problem-solving strategy within each of the organizations so that we are well-positioned on July 1 when these reports start coming in view of, you know, your own internal folks year one, but when your board and others see this data, how are we positioned to explain the rates? I think given the amount of effort that the CLABS Collaborative members have put into place, you are certainly in much better position than probably others in the state and definitely the rest of the country. So we're already in a good position, but how do we get to that theoretical limit of zero and maintain it for a longer amount of time? Rachel, any other comments?
No, I'm okay.
Operator, are there any other questions? Because I think at this time what would be helpful, Hillary and I will talk about some of the comments. We'll be reaching out to everyone, again, for your data, trying to work with you on looking at the RCA process and begin to do year two of some of the site visits that we did last year
so that we can meet with the team and hopefully engage others, since you have so much, so many changes and new staff, and we're rolling out the RRS project within some of your facilities. How do we gain that senior leadership problem-solving support that we hear quite often? So please, operator, if there are any other questions, we'd love to hear from folks. And I'd also like to hear from everyone as far as what would be helpful on the next conference call to help us look at some of these issues and maybe come back to the call with some best practices, answers, or solutions, because I think we were able to vent a lot today, and it was maybe somewhat cathartic, but we still didn't come up with the solution or some answers. And from the perspective of Greater New York and UHF, we really want to be able to help guide you into making the needed improvements that you need. And to Judy, we will get back to you on your question to find out if there is any standard out there, because that will be important as we put responses in place. Operator?
We have one person, Grace Langan, who's queued up.
Hi, Grace.
Yeah, hi, no, this is Dr. Jatro. You know, I practically begged New York to give us the data on biopatches. I know half of the collaborative is using it, half isn't. So when are you going to tell us how those hospitals that are using it are doing compared to those that aren't? And then you can draw that further and use NCAPs. There's a difference in the NCAP use. Dr. Shannon told us that there are NCAPs that have a lower infection rate. And I believe one of them is the BD, the bivalve. So you could use that as another variable, which hospital is using that. And also, when you go with biopatches, you have to tell us who's using it, whose data is coming from the ICU alone, and whose is coming from the ICU and the floors, because the floors are where it's going to make the biggest difference. And
we'll look at that data question again. We've been struggling trying to see if we could really have good data for you, but the way it's...
I have a 50-50 mix now. You have half of the hospitals on biopatches and the other half off.
Right. It's just folks are using it at different points of the insertion. So some are using that insertion.
That's at least a start.
We can look at it, and let's maybe what we will do is not put the numbers in writing but throw them out there for discussion to you. Let us talk to the data folks again.
Excellent. And as far as root cause analysis go, you know, we hear people doing root cause analysis, and we know it's maintenance, but what are you actually coming up with?
Right, and I think that's what our frustration is at this moment. You know, we had the call today. We were hoping to talk about root cause analysis, which we did, but there's really no patterns that we're seeing. So I think, number one, there are two things that need to be done. One, as you're collecting the data on root cause analysis, for the next month, hospitals really need to focus on looking at the patterns so that you have a logistical methodology for doing the RCEA. And then number two, when you identify the problems, then working with Greater New York, and we can identify experts to talk about how they solve these problems.
Yeah, because, you know, it really boils down to having somebody watch each time the line is touched.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one available for that. It's like putting a closed-circuit camera with a VCR tape that you would just fast-forward to every time the line is touched and see if they did it the right way. Because short of spot-checking somebody to see if they're using the right technique, that doesn't mean they're going to use the right technique when they're not being watched. And that's where the problem is. You know, many times people say, oh, I'm just taking blood. I don't really have to do a whole sterile technique. And that's when the patient's most vulnerable.
Well, maybe on the next call we could further explore that. In the meantime, we'll try to relook at the data and reach out to some of you just to figure out what way we could do some of that observation. I don't know if that at all is possible.
Right.
That's the challenge, getting that. But just reinforcing, I think, the dressing changes and getting a systematic approach in place for that would be a first step. And then number two, looking at the techniques for drawing the blood from the lines.
And it does have to do with the type of NCAP you're using. Yeah. Some of the plunger devices, they're not as good. They're going to have a higher infection rate.
Have you addressed that at all?
I've talked to the rep, and I've talked to Dr. Shannon at the last meeting.
Mm-hmm.
He agrees that it is a difference in the NCAPs. He He was using the cheaper one, and he was changing it out. He told us on a conference call a year ago he was changing it out every time it's touched, every day. He didn't wait 3 days or 7 days to change an end cap. He did them all every day.
Are you doing that now?
No, we're not.
Is anyone on the call doing that or addressing that as a particular intervention? Operator, are there any other lines looking to get in? And you can leave this line open.
I show no one else in queue at this time, ma'am.
All right. I think we have our homework cut out for us as we anticipated going into this call. As I mentioned in the beginning, we are seeing somewhat of an increase. But we did really have a great impact up until June. So the question is, what was going well before June? And then what changed from June until now? And can we put another concrete intervention into place to get us back on the road to improvement? But I think there are a lot of issues out there and probably some small steps that you could each take after today's call in trying to address the issues. So we'll probably put some information out to you. We may be reaching out to you for additional information also on some of your processes and RCA techniques. And then on the next call, hopefully we'll be able to more firmly address some of these issues so that you can get the interventions in place prior to the public reporting. Any other thoughts? All right. Thank you for being on the call, and again, we will be in touch with you over the next 2 or 3 weeks via email to try to address this.
And our next call is October 4th, so we'll be in touch well before then. The November call, it's looking like we will be talking about sepsis, so switching gears a little bit and really going through sepsis on the November call.
Mm-hmm. But continuing to address these issues,
right,
because it's really important. Thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes our program for today. You may all disconnect and have a wonderful day.